It's opening week, time for our full season preview and Super Bowl 53 predictions. Plus, we're breaking down what the Khalil Mack trade means for the Bears in that stacked NFC North division, as well as why John Gruden would ship off his superstar edge rusher. It's all on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast 2018 NFL Season Preview. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are hours away from the season opener. We are very excited. We are going to run down all eight divisions and give some sort of predictions, sort of conversations on what we expect for the upcoming season. Let's call it a season preview. But first, we obviously have to get to the fact that a superstar player was traded over the weekend, and it once again, the NFL feels more and more like the NBA with the offseason stuff.
Yeah, the trades are picking up. Probably a top 15 player getting traded right before the season. I'm trying to remember when the last time maybe that's even happened. Have we ever seen this? I can't remember one.
Right before the season, there must have been. It'll strike me as we go on here. But let's get to a Khalil Mack. I'm not sure how you would have missed it. Oh, I guess people were traveling for like Labor Day weekend and whatnot. But if you did miss it, Khalil Mack is now a member of the Chicago Bears for what amounted to, it was two first rounders going from Chicago to Oakland. And then there were some sort of draft swaps, I think a second and a third, where the Bears picked up a little bit more. So they paid a little bit less than two first-rounders, but those will obviously be the picks that everyone will be monitoring over the next 2 years. But let's start on the optimistic side of it, which is the Chicago Bears suddenly have just a ton of talent on defense. I mean, you have Mack and Leonard Floyd bookending. You have Roquan Smith once he's up to speed. This was already a good defense. Are they now a great defense?
Yeah, because we talked this offseason on this very show a few times about how they are one dominant edge player away from being just about as good as anyone in the NFL defensively, close to that. And I would certainly say Khalil Mack qualifies as a dominant edge player. Remember in Vic Fangio in 2012 when he had Ahmad Brooks and Alden Smith with the Niners, and he had Justin Smith there, who was kind of their flex D lineman that year. He's got a similar group now. In fact, I would argue he might have more raw talent now. I'm not going to say these guys are better, but his lineup now of Mack and Leonard Floyd, certainly if Floyd can stay healthy and be what his potential suggests he can be. And then you know how big I am on Akeem Hicks, Gary. I think he's I'm not saying he's better than Justin Smith was that year, but Hicks is in that level of talent. So that's a formidable trio up front, and probably something no team in the NFC, no other team can match, and certainly that no offenses will have answers for.
Yeah, let's look at where the Bears are here in 2018. I know one of the talking points going around this this weekend was, you know, this shows the Bears believe in Mitchell Trubisky. I would argue this probably had no, if Trubisky was totally falling flat on his face, maybe this was something the Bears would hesitate to do. Ryan Pace spent the second overall pick on Mitch Trubisky. If Mitch Trubisky is a bust, he's probably out of a job. He's got to win games. This is their window. We talk about the rookie contract window because of the really, really stupid rookie wage scale. They have this window. They have the ability to add a player who is, 99.4% chance he will be better than the combined two players that they would have gotten with the draft picks they used. But then again, you look at the NFC North. It's such a good division. Where do the Bears fall in this hierarchy now?
That's the problem. It's such a good division. But by the way, that whole this shows they believe in Trubisky. That's just made up perspective. I mean, you can argue that from any direction.
They believed in Trubisky when they spent the second overall pick on him.
Correct.
I mean, there's,
Colts, the Colts never built around Peyton Manning defense, and they never went out and got big defensive players for Peyton Manning. So they built offensively, but did the Colts believe in Manning or not believe in Manning? I mean, it's all a perspective. You can take any move by any team and say they believe in him. If you're giving the quarterback players, well, you believe in him, you're building around the QB. If you don't give them players, you're saying, the Patriots, you think the QB can carry everyone with average guys around them. That's just made up stuff. So this has nothing to do with Trubisky other than what you said about the contract. His contract allows for more flexibility with how you're paying other guys. I think you go out and you try to get good players. That's what the team. That's what this whole thing's about. And the Bears, where they rank now among the NFC teams, are they better? Let's start with this. Are they better than Detroit now? What do you think?
Oh, my God. I've been so high on Detroit. I've been telling people Detroit's my Super Bowl dark horse. I don't know if I can reverse off that now. I'm going to stay with the Bears as still the fourth best team in this division, even though it is now the best division of football.
And I kind of agree with you. You think the NFC North is better than the NFC South?
Yes. Yeah, because I think the Bucs, and look, this is a bit of a prediction. I think the Bucs are gonna collapse. I think they're gonna start slow, and that the wheels are gonna come off that thing. So I'd go NFC North at this point. I honestly think Packers, Vikings, and Lions are all Super Bowl contenders to different degrees, obviously. And if you're the Bears, you're looking at this, and as excited as you should be getting about the prospect of a Matt Nagy working with Mitch Trubisky, I mean, one team is Aaron Rodgers, one team is Matthew Stafford, and suddenly one of what might be one of the best offensive lines in football to finally complement Matthew Stafford and an actual run game, and then you have the Vikings were one of the top three or four teams in football last year, and they just upgraded at quarterback and for all intents and purposes at running back as well with Dalvin Cook coming back. It's tough to argue if you want to say the Bears are better than the Lions, it's not my thing, but I think it's tough to argue the Bears are better than the Packers or the Vikings even after this move.
One thing about the Vikings that's starting to get my attention a little bit, and let's remember, they're the best defense in the NFC still. Everyone's right in their prime, and they've got no weaknesses there. They're pretty deep now. But their offensive lines had those injuries this offseason and leading up to this opening of the season. Little bit of flux there. Kirk Cousins is a QB who would be, as any QB, but especially with Cousins, he's more comfortable with, you need good blockers for him. You know, I just wonder, and then now we're talking about the Bears going out and getting a Khalil Mack, and that makes you remember these offensive linemen, that's a big weakness to have. It's hard to have a weakness at a reactionary position, pass blocking where you react to pass rushers, or corners where you react to wide receivers. It's hard to survive reactionary position weaknesses, and I wonder if the Vikings will level this a little bit. Part of me feels like this is more of a Packers division now. I feel that way more now than I did when I made the predictions a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think it's that difficult to look at the Packers and say they're going to be, I think I said on this show that they're going to go from a C-minus defense to like a B-plus defense, especially if those young corners, if one or two of them pan out, it totally changes what they are defensively. And then obviously you have Aaron Rodgers back, and there's a certain margin for error that you have when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback. So,
absolutely. What do you think about this from the Raiders side then? A lot of people have been critical. Our buddy Connor Orr was very critical of the trade.
He is fired up. Connor's fired up about John Gruden. I'm sure they will talk about that on Wednesday when Connor and Jenny join Albert Breer on that show. This is what it comes down to. Obviously, for me, it comes down to Rex Ryan's Buffalo Bills, as all things do. I am, as anyone who listens to the show or reads my column knows, I'm the last defender of Rex Ryan probably in the world at this point. My thing with Rex Ryan is he was always, everyone gave too much attention to the things he said and the press conference sound bites and all that stuff. Rex Ryan arrived in Buffalo and, you know, he was saying, we're going to the playoffs, we're going to compete with the Patriots and all this stuff. And you looked at the team and you said, well, you don't have a quarterback. You have it's a really good defense, but a lot of these guys don't really fit what you do. So this looks like a rebuild, and you're here saying we're going to the playoffs, we're going to win Super Bowls, et cetera, et cetera. And everyone sort of took what he said at face value and didn't realize, like, you know, this thing's going to really take a couple years. John Gruden's taking the exact opposite tack here in Oakland. He's been telling anyone who will listen, this roster kind of stinks. John Gruden has You know, obviously he has that monster 10-year contract. So he's going to be there for a while anyway, but and with any new regime, you have a little bit of time to build up and do what you do. But since Gruden is not coming in and trying to claim, you know, this was a team that might have made a run at the Super Bowl 2 years ago if Derek Carr doesn't get hurt late in the year, he's sort of saying this roster stinks. We need to tear the whole thing down. And obviously this fits in with with that line of thinking.
It's letting the personality of the head coach cloud the state of the team. A head coach's personality means almost nothing. At least from our standpoint, it's second to a number. It's behind a number of things. It's more than second behind. So I've heard a lot of people say, kind of a trendy tweet yesterday was, and we saw this with the Vegas odds, the Bears got better. And the Raiders, the Bears got better today, which implies the Raiders got worse. The Bears got a better team. This is a long-term move for the Raiders. Of course, they're worse now for the Mac trade than they were before that because they don't have any players to show for it yet. So it's a long-term. We have to have the discussion after 2020 when they've had time to spend these picks or trade them into more picks or whatever they're going to do with the haul. I thought they got a pretty decent return for Mac. I don't know if it's a trade I would have made just if we're talking picks for players, but you have to factor in the money on this kind of conversation. And first of all, you got to just look at the money. Is it worth it? But B, in the Raiders' case, if they didn't have the money, if they didn't have the cash on hand or it wasn't working economically, what are they supposed to do? If they can't afford them, you can't criticize someone for selling a house that they can't pay the mortgage on. So I understand it from both sides. And now I think Connor's point was, well, they spent the money on other guys. And I get that a little bit. But the Raiders have not been on a gigantic spending spree. It's not like they were throwing money at every bad player you can think of and giving them inflated contracts. I didn't think their offseason was off the rails at all.
They've had a weird couple of off seasons because they had all these years where they didn't retain their own draft picks because their own draft picks end up being bad, and this goes back to even before Reggie McKenzie. So they've kind of been scrambling and spending this money and overpaying some of these veterans a little bit more overall. I'm with you. I didn't think anything they did this offseason was crazy. I mean, obviously, since they just let go of Martavis Bryant, that trade doesn't look very good, but that wasn't the difference between keeping Mac or not keeping Mac. I think people do. Of course, you lose track of the fact that it's not only you are trading Khalil Mack, but you're basically freeing up the amount of money you would have had to pay Khalil Mack because of the two guys you will get those draft picks. Even if the Bears somehow finish with the worst record in football the next 2 years, both those guys will be making less than what Khalil Mack makes. It's tough to swallow from the standpoint that Mack is, he was a homegrown guy. He's a guy they drafted. On top of that, I mean, his reputation on the team and around the league is just, sort of an A-plus character guy. He's not a guy who was like a malcontent who was causing problems in the locker room or saying right, outrageous things in public or anything like that. I mean, he is a great talent, and from what we know, he's a great character guy, a great dude to have around your organization. So,
Think of it this way, though, Gary, and I full-heartedly agree with that, and I've heard everything about Mac in that regard, too. Is it fair, if John Gruden wants to say that, and he wouldn't say it publicly like this, but let's say he's talking with Reggie McKenzie, and he says, you know what? We're about to pay Khalil Mack more money than anyone who's ever been paid at the non-quarterback position, and he's the star of a defense that has ranked in the 20s for several years in a row. And last year was 28th in yards per attempt. Now, that's not Mac's fault.
Yes.
It's not even close to Mac. It's all despite Mac. But the point is, if Mac were the answer, the savior, and if he's worth all that money, and so far we haven't successfully built the defense around him, so do we want to spend the money to keep doing that? Because so far it hasn't worked in theory. Yes. The other 10 guys haven't made it work. So you go out and you trade Mac, and now you get draft picks, and those draft picks become 3 or 4 new players potentially, depending on how it shakes out. Keyshawn Johnson, that quote about how Gruden always values veterans over rookies. And that's how he was in Tampa, and that's a criticism of Gruden. Well, that's not what happened here. Mac is the veteran. They went out and traded for draft picks. Those draft picks become high-drafted rookies. Those guys are going to play. I think this is a long-term rebuilding process. Gruden's on a 10-year deal. He's got a lot of slack, and he realizes this roster, in a lot of ways, needs an overhaul. So let's make the overhaul. And they're moving cities, too. So they're going to have a built-in fan base in 2 years from now. It's not like that Vegas stadium's not going to be full because they traded Mac away back in 2018. If you're ever going to make a bold move like this, this is the time to do it. The conditions are perfect. It just upsets fans for right now, and I get that. But sometimes you've got to take these swings, these big swings.
No, and I think the point you sort of made at the beginning of that was really good. And it's tough to make the argument in the short attention span world that we're in now. But trading Mac makes you worse. But you had Mac, and you were bad on defense. So it's not saying, oh, well, let's clear out everyone. This is everyone's fault type thing. Obviously, it's not Khalil Mack's fault. But do you just say, let's take a different approach here? We need to come up with a different plan and rebuild this thing from scratch a little bit. The last thing I wanted to ask Andy, and look, we've talked about, there's all these rumors of cash flow problems in Oakland. They wouldn't be able to literally pay Khalil Mack regardless of what they wanted to do. We don't have any verification of how true that is, but it sounds like there's something to it. When you looked at this Raiders team, let's say they had Khalil Mack on, and let's say they had worked out a deal, Mack was coming back. Do you see them? I think they were not only a 6-10 team last year. I thought they were a bad 6-10 team. I thought their wins were not particularly impressive. I thought this very well could have been a 4-12 team last year, the way they performed. Do you see them as what they were last year, or do you see them as what they were when they were the playoff team, when they were sort of the hot up-and-coming team, and then Derek Carr breaks his leg in December of 2016?
I've grappled with that question because I don't know what Gruden will be. The coaching was a big deal in 2016. Bill Musgrave on offense as their coordinator, he did a tremendous job, and they got the most out of what they had in 2016. I don't know what the coaching's like now. And I'm not saying that as a leading negative. I'm saying it like, I don't know. We have not seen John Gruden in 10 years. So even if we were to just go by what he was before, it's in a different era now. So the context is different. So, and he's such a unique character as well that it's just a lot is up in the air. I will be utterly fascinated to see how it goes. And if I had to guess one way or the other, I think Gruden's going to have to do more adjusting than he realizes, and that will probably have some ebb and flow with it. And to answer your question, Gary, they're probably more of a 6-10 type of team than they are what 12-4 a few years before.
Yeah. And look, they were already obviously lame duck status in Oakland, so you wonder what that's going to do anyway to the sort of atmosphere around the team. But certainly moving Mac at this point sends an unfortunate message to the guys that 2018 is not a year that they are going to be competitive. Before we move on, Andy, just a quick note. You know, only with NFL Game Pass can you replay every game all season. It's NFL football anytime on your time. There were so many great games in the preseason and so many good ones coming up in week one here. Hey, we're going to see Khalil Mack versus Aaron Rodgers on that first Sunday night game. You want to check it out, rewatch it, or watch the coaches film. You can do that here. We're going to have the Seahawks and the Broncos, Case Keenum's debut there. What are the Broncos going to do offensively? What are the Cowboys going to do without Travis Frederick up front when they face the Panthers, who might be going back to what they used to do 2 years ago, getting away from the blitz and going with a little more of a traditional Panthers defense? It's going to be a fascinating week one. You're going to want to see all these games at some point. And like Andy and I always say, you're going to want to watch the coaches' film whenever you have a chance to sort of get a better feel for what's going on in these games. With NFL Game Pass, you can replay every game from any angle. There's the broadcast version, commercial-free. There's the coach's film, which shows the all-22 angle that we love here. And then there's the condensed games that let you watch a game in about 45 minutes. And I just got to say, that's perfect if you have something to do Thursday night and you want to catch the Thursday night or on Friday morning. I'm just saying, that's what I do a lot during the season. Remember, with NFL Game Pass, it's game time anytime. Best of all, you can kick off the 2018 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Sign up now at NFL.com/MMQB10things. That's MMQB10things. Game on. All right, Andy, more bad news out of the Bay Area here. Jerick McKinnon, torn ACL. He is going to miss the season for the 49ers. I know this is a headliner for fantasy football players, and that's all well and good. I don't know if a year ago, if Jerick McKinnon was hurt for the Vikings, we would have been having it as topic number two on our season preview show. But this is kind of a big deal for the 49ers here. We talk all the time about how well Kyle Shanahan marries the run game and the pass game, and how crucial that is for the offense. McKinnon was his hand-picked guy. He's out. It looks like it's going to be Alfred Morris early on in this year, which is a downgrade from McKinnon, certainly a downgrade from what Carlos Hyde provided them last year.
And it'll eventually become Matt Breida, because he's just got more juice, a lot more juice than Morris. Breida, at times, supplanted Carlos Hyde last year, who was a really good runner. So they're thin at running back for sure. And this is a big – McKinnon, I was not big on him in Minnesota. But that's a whole different offense than Kyle Shanahan's offense. And the Niners understand that. The Jets understood that too. And those two teams were bidding against each other. McKinnon's price got driven way up, and he got a big free agent rookie or free agent running back contract, which is unusual. I think this is an enormous injury. I'm disappointed for the Niners, and I do think this will impact their bottom line at some point.
Yeah, that's we'll obviously talk about the Niners when we run through the season preview here. How much of a downgrade is this for this offense? I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo, we sort of put out the reminder every once in a while, 7 career starts. Obviously, he's been great, but this seems to limit what they can do offensively.
It raises the discussion because you don't technically need – let's start with what they do offensively just so people can know what we're talking about. It makes good podcasting when you let them know what you're talking about. They want to move their running back all over the formation and dictate passing game matchups that way. And so you think about the most obvious example, and they did this a lot, is you shift your running back out wide, way wider than the wide receivers, in an empty formation. Nobody's in the backfield, so 5 receivers all up out wide. When you do that, your receivers go inside, you get them matched up against different guys, you set up route combinations, you move the pieces around. You don't technically need a big-time receiving threat to do that with the running back. The defense still has to react to whoever lines up out there. The Patriots with James Devlin do this a lot, not just with James White. They also do it with their fullback, James Devlin. So the Niners can still theoretically do what they've done. Now, that's one thing. It's a whole other thing, though, to do that and have threats when you're doing it. Case in point, people complain about Kyle Juszczyk, the Niners fullback, and how he's paid gobs more than any other fullback. Well, the reason why is because he's one of maybe, he might be the only fullback, a true fullback, who can also pose a threat as a receiver. So they're not paying Juszczyk because he's a fullback. They're paying him because he's a fullback who can catch the ball in a variety of ways, and that makes all these matchup pieces much better for them. The same is true with Jerick McKinnon, just on a magnified scale. So now they've lost that. They can still do what they're trying to do, but they don't pose the same level of threat with it. It's hard, Gary, because we always say, when you take a guy out of a lineup, when you're evaluating injuries, do we look at the replacement guy, or do we look at how much the offense has to change in their approach with him out of the lineup? And the Niners, I don't think they have to change a whole lot, but I do think the replacement's a big downgrade, and maybe that might ultimately lead to a change. You throw the ball to your stars, and McKinnon's a guy they were going to throw the ball 70 times to.
Yeah. That's and just a reminder for anyone who forgot about it was Kyle Juszczyk, offensive weapon, I believe, was his position designation when they first signed him two off seasons ago. Wasn't that
Juszczyk
a thing, Andy?
Yeah, that was a big deal. He was, and they love Kyle. They do not at all regret that signing. I would almost guarantee that.
All right, we're going to jump into the regular season preview, 2018 preview. But first, a quick note here. You know, on Thursday Night Football will make its long-anticipated return to living rooms across America. That means bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs at DraftKings.com. The leader in one-week fantasy sports for the season opener, DraftKings is hosting a fantasy football contest that is $10 to enter and has a $1 million top prize. But for a limited time only, you can sign up with the code 10THINGS, that's 10THINGS, today. DraftKings will give you a free entry with your first deposit. Single Game Showdown is the newest way to play. All you have to do is draft six players from Thursday's game, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Put your football knowledge to work, and you could win $1 million while watching the season opener. The top prize is $1 million, but you don't have to come in first to be the winner. There are $2.5 million in total prizes, which means thousands of winners. So download the app or go to DraftKings.com now and use the promo code 10THINGS, again, that's 10THINGS, to sign up and make your first deposit. When you do, DraftKings will give you a free shot at $1 million this Thursday. That's code 10THINGS, 10THINGS, at DraftKings.com. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, we are going to preview the 2018 NFL season right now. The way we're going to do this is, well, it's not really going to shock you. We're going to run through division by division. If you want to jump around within the podcast, we're going to do it in the traditional order. I always feel bad for the West teams and the fans of the West teams, but look, we just talked NFC West and AFC West at the top of the show, so I don't feel as bad for you. We're going to start with AFC East, then go AFC North, AFC South, AFC West, then we jump over to the NFC. NFC East, NFC North, NFC South, NFC West, AFC East, Andy. I don't think we're shocking anyone when we're pointing out that Andy would only pick the Patriots to win this. I think the biggest shocker in your preseason predictions, Andy, is that you have the Jets going to the postseason, and I would counter that shocker by saying in the upcoming MMQB.com, the MMQB.com season predictions, I have the Dolphins going to the playoffs. So we both have weird, kind of bad last year AFC East teams going to the playoffs. Defend
well, the
your
AFC's
Jets
down. You have to do that. There's not a lot of teams in the AFC this year that are obvious. And that might change. You know, we might feel stupid for saying that. But at this point, it looks like there aren't a lot of obvious playoff teams in the AFC.
Jets, you're just riding the defense, I guess.
I'm riding the defense, and most specifically the secondary. I think the Dolphins have a fine defense, too. Some questions at linebacker that really hurt them last year. They have different guys now with Raekwon McMillan back, but some questions there. And losing Ndamukong Suh, they're probably not. They're a good D-line, but they're not as good as they were a year ago, we have to assume. What I like about the Jets is that they've got man-to-man corners and flexible safeties. And in Todd Bowles' scheme, that's the most important thing. So the Jets are, and they're not good in a lot of other areas. And I had to, for that prediction thing, I had to rank each position group team by team. And I think the Jets rank 20 or lower in almost every other position group head-to-head with other NFL teams. But their secondary is near the top there. And they can build around that. And I think we're going to see them win a lot of games on big plays defensively this season.
Let's briefly talk about the Buffalo Bills here as well. And then, by the way, I like the Dolphins. I think the talent drop-off isn't quite as sharp as people think. I just kind of like the culture reset, and we've talked about on this show. Adam Gase brought in the guys he wanted who will execute his system. 2 years ago, Adam Gase was the whiz kid. Adam Gase was you know, the 38-year-old guy everyone was excited about as the next great head coach. Now he's on the hot seat because that is how the news cycle works. But I would put my trust in Gase, and I think this is a team that's going to win 8 or 9 games, and that puts you in playoff contention in the AFC. The Bills are interested. They, another Raiders-related move this past weekend. The Bills send A.J. McCarron to Oakland. McCarron obviously will be a backup in Oakland. He was signed by the Bills this past offseason to compete with, we thought, Josh Allen for the starting job, but it sounds like, and we'll find out this week, but it sounds like Nathan Peterman has a shot at this job. And I would just ask you philosophically, Andy, this Bills offensive line is it's bad. I don't see any way it is not going to be really bad, because it's not even one of those things where you're saying, well, they got a bunch of young guys and maybe these guys improve. They just seem to have they're shorthanded on the offensive line.
Yeah.
Would you – we saw in the third preseason game, Josh Allen was running for his life. Considering this is probably a rebuilding year for the Bills, although so was last year and they ended up accidentally making the playoffs, would you put Josh Allen – your young developmental guy out there behind this offensive line, or would you just say roll out Nathan Peterman and let's get him in 2019?
It's a hard discussion because people remember what happened to Tim Couch and David Carr, and that gets brought up. But then you also Troy Aikman will tell you he got beat around as a rookie, and that mm-hmm. made him better in the long run. I think Peyton Manning took some shots as a rookie, not the same way as Aikman, but
Jared Goff got beat up more recently.
Yeah, I think ultimately what coaches have to do, the most important thing is once the season starts, you know, these, we just talked about Mac and taking the long view in these offseason moves. And I understand the long view. Now that we're in September and the season's starting, these are now week-to-week discussions, you've got to do everything you can to win the game that week. Even if you're rebuilding long haul, the way to rebuild is to you got to practice winning, got to practice trying to be what you're trying to become. And so you play the quarterback that gives you the best chance that week. You'll lose the locker room if you don't, especially at the quarterback position, especially early in the season. I think the quarterback that gives him the best chance is Josh Allen. Bigger, stronger, and he gives you the running dimension, and they're going to need a running game with some deception in it in order to hide that offensive line. I do realize, though, if Allen's starting to fear ghosts and see ghosts in the pocket because of all the hits he's been taking and what he will take, that can tinker and toy and mess with a guy's development, but you're going to have to deal with that at some point anyway. You're never going to have perfect pass blocking conditions in the NFL. You can't cultivate your QB under the assumption that you can achieve that. You can't say, oh, well, let's wait for the blocking to get good. It doesn't work that way.
Okay. As the resident Bills apologist, I say play Nathan Peterman. Keep Allen off the field this year. I think you are already threading something of a needle in your development of Josh Allen and what he needs to what he needs to become and what he needs to work on. And I think this is one more variable that I would not want to throw out there as something that would possibly muck up what he's going to become. Let's go AFC North. Let's just talk Steelers really quick. Everyone knows Steelers are going to score a lot of points. I think you and I would both agree they're the best team in this division. Defensively, a lot more three safety. They did not directly replace Ryan Shazier this offseason. What's your gut feeling on this defense? Are they league average? Are they better? I mean, we talked about this as a unit on the rise a year or two ago.
I think they're better. I think they're better than league average. Nobody talks about their D-line. Cameron Hayward, I had him first team All-Pro last year. He was sensational in all facets. Stephon Tuitt has developed. Javon Hargrave is maybe the most athletic nose tackle in the NFL right now. That's a really good front with Bud Dupree, who's serviceable and maybe a tick above that, and TJ Watt off the mm-hmm. edge. They can control the game up front, and they've got cornerbacks and young safeties who can cover on the back end too. I'm higher on a lot of their young players than other people might be, and than Steeler fans might be, so I'm optimistic about this defense.
Okay. Let's go. Well, you have the Bengals. You picked the Bengals at the bottom of this division in your preseason predictions. They sort of address the offensive line. I realize, bringing in Cordy Glenn and drafting Billy Price might not be, headlining moves, but they should be a little bit better up front. And this was certainly their Achilles heel last year.
Well, it's headlining moves to them. Two most important positions are left tackle and center up front, and they got new guys at each of them, and they made big investments to get them. It just feels like there's something stale with this whole organization. I think everyone inside and outside of football was shocked that they didn't make at least a QB change or especially a head coaching change this year just to kind of push a reset button. And you had some assistant coaches defect from the Bengals, I think, because of that. They went on and took new jobs because there's just something that's gone a little bit stale in Cincinnati.
Ravens, obviously, if they beat the Bengals at home to finish last season, they end up make the playoffs. How to ask this? This defense, I know you really like the defense, and it's a lot of veteran talent on the defense. They seem to have really good games against really bad quarterbacks last year, and in the end, they couldn't stop Andy Dalton in their own building to make the playoffs. Are we perhaps overrating the defense and going on the Ravens' reputation a little bit? Do you see any problems with this team defensively, especially, anticipating they'll be, maybe an average offense this year would be an optimistic look?
I like the D. I'm pretty high on the defense because they can do they don't have to blitz to generate pressure, but they're one of the more creative, better designed blitzing defenses in the league. Now, we'll see what they are under Don Martindale, their new D coordinator. He's going to take the same approach philosophically that their previous coordinator, Dean Pease, took. Martindale, I don't believe he's been an NFL play caller before, though. So we'll see how it goes, but I think the Ravens are – they're always so fundamentally sound, too. They were not as consistent last year as other years on defense, but – there's enough body of work with enough of these veterans. That's a pretty sound defense overall.
Let's. And what do you think about the Browns? By the way, what would be a happy season for the Browns? What's sort of the high end of their win total possibility here?
I picked them at 4-12. I've said for a few years I thought they had 6-10 type of talent. They're not set offensively or defensively. You got a lot of questions, of course. And what I really wonder about with them, and I'm curious to see how it goes now, because they do have more players that this coaching staff has had the say over. They brought in some of their guys now. It's not the previous front office's guys. What will the schematic approach be? Because the schematic approach has not always matched what you want with your talent, and they've put some guys in some difficult positions, I think, but they've got good proven coaches in Hugh Jackson and Greg Williams, a D coordinator there. So I'm curious to see how it goes now that those guys have some of the guys they want.
AFC South, Jaguars, the front runner again. I wanted to ask you one specific thing about the Texans. Deshaun Watson, obviously, last year had the breakout game in Week 3. The Texans changed what they do offensively midstream last season. I think that was an advantage. And as much as we saw very encouraging things from Watson, that not only from the fact that they were sort of catching opponents off guard with the new stuff they were doing, he was also developing very nicely. With all the time he missed, I mean, they had to sort of build something on top of this, because now everyone's had an entire offseason to see what they do. No one's going to be basically caught off guard by what they do. When you miss that kind of time, when you can't get on the field, you can't get the practice time, obviously he was back this summer, but do you think that slows down what the development trajectory would have been and sort of what it will be going forward?
Sure, yeah. I mean, if you're not practicing, that will slow down your development, but Deshaun Watson, this whole thing is going to come down to what style of pro QB can he be. The college stuff that he did, and they did such a great job of sprinkling that in last year, and even more than sprinkling it in, it was a main ingredient. But that stuff is ephemeral to a certain degree. If you don't have the foundation to run traditional pro concepts and play from within the pocket, then that college stuff you do, that's not going to last very long. That's not a strong pillar to build on. Those are tangential tactics to rely on. Watson showed that pro ability last season. We don't know if he'll have it yet or not. It's been only a few games. But the toughness and poise from the pocket, the willingness to go through all of his reads and get to the backside reads if the stuff on the front side wasn't open, that came along last year, and that's what makes me so optimistic. And as long as he's doing that, then they can build that college type of stuff and use his legs and be creative. You're only as good there, though, as you are at the basic stuff.
And I did want to ask about the Colts. Andrew Luck has brought some bad teams to the to the playoffs over the course of his career. Is this going to be the worst supporting cast he's ever had, both from what he has on offense and what the Colts have on the defensive side of the ball?
I think it's a better offense than he's had in some years. Maybe not every year, but some of the years. Mm-hmm. That receiving core is thin, very thin. But if those tight ends stay healthy, Jack Doyle and Eric Ebron, they can get by with a thin receiving core because those tight ends, especially Ebron, they're flexible receivers. So they can act as wide receivers, and you're facing a different defense when you use a tight end instead of a wide receiver. So I and the O-line, they've addressed it. We'll see how it goes, but I'm optimistic. I'm more optimistic than I have been in previous years. If we're counting the defense, though, as part of the supporting cast, then the answer to your question is probably yes, Gary. That defense has a lot of different guys that'll be there next year. That's not at all the defense that they want long term.
AFC West, Andy, you are susceptible to the trend. You are picking the Chargers to win the AFC West here. All right, realistically, I actually want to talk about the Chiefs real quick. Patrick Mahomes, he's going to throw more interceptions. He's going to deliver more big plays. Is that, I think that's definitely a recipe for winning games in January. I think you have to have some level of aggressiveness from your quarterback. I think that's why Alex Smith was never going to get this team to the level they wanted to get to. But in the regular season, when you are not facing great opponents every week, is almost like this team will be better equipped for January, but worse equipped for September through December.
I think this team's going to be, one week we're going to think, oh my, this is a team to beat in the AFC. They've got a ton of weapons. And the next week we're going to think this team is on its face. What are they doing? Mahomes, what's he doing out there? I think they're going to be very high and low this season, which oddly enough, Gary, we forget this because we think of Alex Smith as Captain Steady, but this has been a team of highs and lows for a few years now. They'll win six games in a row, then lose five in a row. It's a very up and down team overall. And having Mahomes there, he's going to have growing pains. He just will. The QBs with that style and that youth and talent mix, they just have growing pains. But there's still going to be growth. You only have growing pains if you're growing. I'm optimistic. That throw to Tyreek Hill against the Falcons a few weeks ago that Albert Breer broke down on I saw it on Twitter, his breakdown on their NFL Game Pass segment. That's as good of a throw as I think I've ever seen. I mean, it's grain of salt because these are practice games, but that throw was unbelievable where he got behind the defense and Mahomes lofted it over there.
Mm-hmm.
Launched right, before, it, not lofted. It was much
yeah,
more of a launch.
I was going to say, yeah. there's nothing loft about it.
Yeah.
Before we jump to the NFC, just a quick programming note. Andy and I are going to do our deep dive show this week. It is not going to go on Thursday. It will be on Thursday every week this season. It was on Thursday last week. If you want to listen to that one, we previewed the opener. But we are going to go on Friday this week because of the opener. We're gonna give our thoughts on what happens Thursday night when the Eagles take on the Falcons. And that's actually going to be the same day as the MMQB Gambling Podcast. So you can listen to two shows on Friday in case you didn't do that in the past. I don't know. Let's go to the NFC, Andy. Let's see. The East, the Eagles are still the favorite here. We've talked a lot about the Giants offense. I love the Giants offense. How much trouble are they going to be in defensively? Because I look at it, the secondary had issues last year. On top of that, they don't have a pass rush. Is this almost going to be a team that loses a lot of games like 31-28?
Yeah, it's going to come down to if that secondary can bounce back. This gets lost because there were off-the-field issues with Eli Apple and Landon Collins kind of going back and forth. Mostly, it sounds like it was mostly Apple's immaturity and Collins' reaction to it, whatever it was. It was all off-the-field discussion. On the field, those guys didn't play. It wasn't just Apple. It was also Janoris Jenkins. They didn't play as well as they did the year before, and that's what changed that Giants defense because they didn't have great pass rushers. the past several years, but those corners were so good one-on-one outside that they were able to do a lot more things with their blitzes, and so it got lost that they didn't have great pass rushers. They're banking on that same approach with James Betcher, because Betcher, who was with Arizona last year, he's a big-time blitzing guy. He's a Todd Bowles disciple. He blitzed more than anyone but Steve Wilkes, I believe, in Carolina last season. That's how they want to play. And so they've got dynamic safeties. They signed Alec Ogletree, who's a good blitzer and can also cover. That's important if you're blitzing. You want to have a linebacker that can peel back and cover in case someone releases as a hot receiver against the blitz. Or, I mean, there's a lot of options there, but all of this is dependent on the cornerbacks winning one-on-one outside. Jenkins has to play better. He's their most important player defensively.
Washington, you in the magazine predictions, you had Washington at 5-11. I sort of make the other side of the Mahomes in Kansas City argument. You bring in Alex Smith. He is a much more conservative quarterback than Kirk Cousins was. They're probably not terribly dissimilar as far as arm talent goes. The fact that Smith is sort of so, he's not going to turn the ball over. He's not going to lift your offense, but he's not going to turn it over. Does that allow them to maybe squeak out 7 or 8 wins or something like that?
I don't think so. Unless they have a better running game than expected, which they very well could. Their offensive line is tremendous. So, I mean, I guess I'm not banging the table saying no. Here's the big difference between Smith and Cousins, and it's a big difference in this scheme that Jay Gruden runs. Cousins is a timing and rhythm thrower, and so he throws with anticipation, and you can design some very specific plays because of that. Alex Smith, though similar in physical ability to Cousins, he's a see-it-then-throw-it player, which is why he doesn't have a lot of turnovers. Guys have to show open and stay open for him to pull the trigger. That's fine in some schemes. It worked real well at times in Kansas City with all the misdirection stuff where the plays last longer and everything kind of slows down a little bit inherently. That's not going to work in a timing and rhythm offense like Jay Gruden's, where things don't slow down. It's about bang, bang, and quickness and being right on schedule. I just don't think the style of QB fits the system here.
Let's go NFC North. Look, we broke these teams down pretty well during the Khalil Mack discussion here. I do want to dive a little bit deeper into the Lions, though. You picked the Lions to win 10 games and just missed the playoffs here in the magazine, though obviously 10 wins is impressive. I love the fact that they are actually going to have not just a serviceable running game for the first time under Matthew Stafford. I think it's going to be a very good running game, maybe one of the better running games in the league. They finally have some additional dimensions to this offense that they haven't had in the past. On top of that, I love how deep they are, sort of on both sides of the ball, and I think Gerard Davis is a rising star at linebacker. I think they are very good in the secondary. I wish the pass rush was better, but when people have been asking me who's the long shot dark horse Super Bowl contender, I've been saying the Giants and the Lions.
I kind of agree with you. By the way, did you know that Matt Patricia, who I do not know, I've never met Matt Patricia, but I've seen him in passing over the years, especially at the Combine, like you see him in a hotel lobby or in the convention center or walking down the street, almost every time I've seen him, and it was just true when I visited their training camp a few weeks ago, when he's just out and about, he still has the pencil behind his ear.
Yeah?
That's something I don't know. I mean, he probably doesn't have it at home when he's just home with his wife and kids.
when he's taking a shower.
Yeah. But a lot of the time that I've seen him, he's had that pencil behind his ear. That's for my interpretation. That's not just a game day thing for him. I don't know how that impacts their playoff chances, but I just thought of it as you were talking and I thought, well, here's a chance to say it. Let's say it.
All right. Well, that's your Matt Patricia pencil news right there.
Real quick, I'm with you on the Lions, and I think they've got so we just talked about Alex Smith and the system fit, and I don't think the QB style matches the system. They don't have a ton of talent on defense for the Lions. I'm with you on the offense. I think I love Stafford, and if the running game's better, that's going to be a fun offense to watch. I also love Kenny Golladay at wide receiver. I think he's going to be a 1,200-yard guy soon. So there's the offense. The defense, which is not overly talented, it has the right style of players for Patricia's scheme. Those Patriots Patriots that Patricia coached. They were not overly talented either, but they had flexible, versatile defensive backs, and they had run-clogging defensive linemen and strong side linebackers. They've got that in Detroit. I think this team can play very well within the context of Patricia's system.
Let's go NFC South. We talked quite a bit about Cam Newton and the offensive line problems, injury problems that the Panthers have on last Monday's show. We talked a lot about the Falcons on last Thursday's show. We're going to sort of gloss over the Bucs here. Let's talk about the Saints. The Saints, they kind of showed you that they felt they were, I mean, and look, they're right to feel this way. They feel they're ready to win a Super Bowl. They made an aggressive move up in the draft to get a guy, Marcus Davenport, who a lot of people thought was really like sort of, you know, after Bradley Chubb, the only impact pass rusher available in the draft. So it seems like they are, at least they feel they're ready to go win a Super Bowl this year.
They should. In fact, they should feel that so strongly that if they didn't make these moves, if they didn't make these all-in, immediate, let's get better right here, right now moves, that would be wrong. That would be foolish of them. That's how close they are to a Super Bowl. They should have been in the NFC Championship game last year. And then who knows from there? They've got the quarterback. They've got the dynamic offense. Their defense is better. The other night I was trying to drift off to sleep, and I thought about that Stephon Diggs play against Marcus Williams, their free safety. The part of that that gets lost, by the way, and this is just an individual detail. This doesn't impact how we feel about the Saints this season. The part that gets lost is that Diggs was even open for the ball to be thrown to him in the first place. I know Williams missed a tackle, and that's what ended the season right there. Mm-hmm. But they would have been in field goal range if Williams had made the tackle or if Diggs was going to get out of bounds. So they would have been in field goal range if it hadn't gone that way. And I thought that was the most incredible part of that play, is that the Saints, for as good as they were defensively, that was the last thing we saw of them, was a total breakdown on defense, and it was not just Marcus Williams. Diggs should never have been open on that play. And if he wasn't, we'd be talking about this team. I bet this team would be a lot of people's Super Bowl picks, because let's say they go on and lose to Philly, and you know we don't know that, but let's say that's what happened. That team that loses the NFC Championship, they tend to be Super Bowl picks in following seasons.
Yeah, I would disagree that was the most incredible part of that play, but that was...
What did you think it was?
Well, the fact that Williams missed the tackle. I still remember the feeling of watching that play, and when Diggs caught the ball, my first reaction was, I can't believe they let him get open on the sideline. And then obviously once the tackle was missed and then he started running, and I wondered if there was someone even behind Marcus Williams who was going to make the play, and should Diggs just step out of bounds, and that that was not the case. So I do want to ask you real quick, because a lot of people like the Teddy Bridgewater trade to New Orleans. I want you to keep an open mind on this, Andy, and I want to ask you, Drew Brees is not a guy who has elite arm strength at this point. If you drop Teddy Bridgewater into this offense, you know, they've gotten more horizontal. They hit their deep shots up the seams a lot. It seems like it's probably the I'll say, especially they play indoors, it's climate controlled. I think this is the best fit for Teddy Bridgewater. For anyone saying, I think Teddy Bridgewater is a franchise quarterback, I think this is probably the best landing spot for him.
Okay, I when you started that question, I thought you were going down the path of...
Should they start Bridgewater
over Brees? Yeah, well, or just if they had to play Bridgewater, Brees were out, would the offense drop off that much? I thought you were about to ask me that. And I was going through my files of the meanest responses I can give on a podcast. And this is a good opportunity for Bridgewater. I think he's a one-year backup QB right now, and that's the extent of it. And like we just said, they feel they're a Super Bowl team. They gave up a third-round pick. That's a lot to give up for a one-year backup rental. But if Brees were unavailable for 3 to 5 weeks or something like that, this gives them a chance to go 500 during that time. And so I get the move. I was fine with it. But the idea, maybe they found the heir apparent to Brees, I don't think they're thinking of it like that. They maybe will one day, but they're going to probably have to make a decision on Bridgewater next year without having actually seen him play a whole lot. So I think this is a trade for a backup QB at the most. And Breeze's arm strength, it's not what it was, but he doesn't play that way. And that's the difference between him and a Bridgewater type. Bridgewater does not have good arm strength, and he plays like a guy that doesn't have good arm strength because he's never been able to make those throws. So you don't think about making the stick throw, the tight window throw. You're not an inherently decisive player because you haven't had decisive physical traits your whole life. Breeze, he did have a strong arm for a lot of years there, and I don't think he's not Matt Schaub now either. So he plays extremely decisively, and that offsets a lot of the arm strength stuff. It's a whole anticipation to offset arm strength. People who listen to this podcast know I'm a big believer in arm strength. I do think it matters, but that doesn't mean that if you don't have it, you can't play. There are ways around it, and Breeze does everything else so borderline perfectly that he's a great example of it.
NFC West, you know, we've talked a ton about the Rams and 49ers all offseason. We talked about the Niners at the top of the show. I think everyone agrees the Rams are the favorite in this division to repeat here. I want to talk about the two teams at the bottom of this division. Andy, I've said this about the Seahawks. You have Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright on the defensive side of the ball. I know the secondary is nowhere near what it once was. And I think you have some guys who can be disruptive up front. Can this team kind of tread water, and then you get you get some Russell Wilson magic? Russell Wilson, he had probably like 9 great games last year, and then a couple okay and a couple bad. If you stretch it out to 11 or 12 great games, is this a team that can go 9-7, 10-6, be in the playoff hunt?
Well, any team that has a quarterback that has 11 or 12 great games is going to have a chance to be in the playoff hunt, wouldn't you say?
Maybe.
Quite
don't,
possibly.
Don't point out the stupidity of my framing, Andy. Just answer the question that I intended to ask.
Well, let's look at it this way. If we didn't know what the Seahawks defense was before, if we hadn't, the Legion of Boom hadn't existed, and we were just looking at this defense in isolation, blank slate, how would we feel about this defense?
I think you could argue that maybe they could be like Panthers light. The linebacking play is that good.
Right. I like that answer. That makes, yeah, KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner are tremendous. Frank Clark has tremendous ability. We'll see what comes of it. Jaron Reed is, I said earlier that Hargrave for the Steelers might be the most athletic nose tackle. I got to take that back a step and say it's probably Jaron Reed. Hargrave's a close number two. He's going to have a big year for them in Seattle, Jaron Reed. It's the question about the secondary, and especially if Earl Thomas is not there, which right now he's not. And maybe he does have his heels dug in. And maybe he does realize what we're talking about, which is this defense is not where it needs to be. Why would I take mileage off of my body for this team if they're not going to have me there next year anyway? I mean, it might be his mindset. I don't know. I think it's a very average defense overall. Average achieved through means of highs and lows. The highs, some really good players. The lows are some really big questions at starting positions, cornerback and safety, namely.
And the Cardinals, everyone's so down on the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals are going to win like 7 games or so. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. But why is everyone so down on the Cardinals? I know, you know, Bruce Arians is gone, and let's see what the Steve Wilks era brings. I think they still have a ton of talent on defense. I think, look, they won games with Blaine Gabbert and Drew Stanton a year ago. Sam Bradford and Josh Rosen in some combination is an upgrade over that. I think the Cardinals are just fine.
I'm with you. Of all my picks, this is the one I feel worst about. I am so what's the opposite for confident? Like, what would be the opposite word, Mr. Editor?
Unconfident.
Okay. Wow. All right. Thank you. I'm so unconfident about this pick. I have them going 4-12. And the only reason I'm pulling the curtain back here and exposing myself on this, the only reason is because when I sit down and make these predictions, I got to have the wins total 256, because that's how many games you played across the league. And I think every team's good, and I see the bright side on a lot of these teams, Gary. And I probably had the Cardinals at 8-8 when I started and realized, oh, I've got 290 wins here. I need to start shaving off, and they were the team I happened to shave off. I don't think they're a 4-12 type of team, but I don't think there is a 4-12 type of team in the NFC this year. Someone will go 4-12, but I cannot tell you who it will be. Cardinals are who I settled on because of all the questions on O-line and wide receiver. But that defense, and the other reason I didn't like them is they're very thin. That defense, though, the first string of the defense is probably top 15, certainly, probably top 10. Everything behind that, though, big question. So if injuries strike, which they always do, I think this team will take on water pretty quickly.
Yeah. They also have David Johnson back. That's the other thing I was excited about with the
He's
the
a good player. He helps.
Is. He is. Andy, I know you had to pick Falcons and Steelers. Falcons over Steelers. So it was a Super Bowl pick back. When did you do those? You must have done those in, like, early August?
You know when I did those? I'll tell you exactly when I did them. I did them at the Hall of Fame Gold Jacket Dinner, which was early August. I was there at the Jerry Kramer table because he's an Idaho guy, and I've been friends with the family for a while. The next table over was Ed Reed and the Ray Lewis table. That was a lot of fun. But it was a spillover table, and it was just me and then one old guy from Kramer's party. There was two extra seats at the table. And so the old guy and I, we couldn't hear each other. We were so far away. So I sat there during the fancy steak dinner making my predictions on my phone. I was actually glad I had no one at the table with me because and Jerry Kramer's at a different table. They don't have these Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame guys get paraded around. There's a bunch of people that take pictures. So the friends and family, it's like a wedding. The friends and family sit somewhere else. And I was like whatever the lowest invited guest for the wedding would be, but you're just honored to be there. You know, I mean, I don't need to be an usher or anything. But anyway, I sat there by myself at that fancy steak dinner with all these Hall of Fame people around. And I was so relieved because I had to make these predictions and I was able to do it on my phone while I ate. And that's when I came up with all this stuff.
I was going to say, you could have told that in a much more inspiring way. Being in the hall,
right, like I saw
you were,
like I saw someone come across, like, who's a great Falcons, like Andre Rison, or I don't know who's walked through, and I was moved by the sight of him, and that's what, but you asked when I made it, and I remember exactly when I made it. It was during the Hall of Fame Gold Jacket ceremony.
Are you all these days later now that you're you're a civilian again?
I'm as confident as before. Absolutely. Okay. What's your Super Bowl pick?
I picked Packers over Patriots. I really wanted to pick Lions,
and it was getting to be too much.
Yeah.
I had Pats over Packers last year.
All right.
Yeah. Whatever.
All right, Andy. That's a wrap. Like we said earlier, we will be back with the Deep Dive Show Friday this week, not Thursday, as it will always be. Throughout the rest of time, we will be doing it Friday in order to have our reaction and breakdown to the Thursday night opener. And of course, you can still get the MMPB podcast with Albert Breer. He'll be joined by Jenny Vrentis and Connor Orr on Wednesday, as usual this week. Myself, Scott Gramling, and Jimmy Traina on the MMPB Gambling Podcast on Friday. So there you go. That's your entire week for the opener. Thanks to today's sponsors, NFL Game Pass and DraftKings. Without them, they wouldn't let us do the show, so please support them the way they support us. Thank you to our researcher, Reed Foster, all the hard work that makes us sound so smart, and thanks as always to producer Shelby Royston, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 who makes us sound good every week. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You really are the best. We will have the mini mailbag. It will probably be especially mini on Friday for the Deep Dive Show, but send your questions. We'll answer one or two. We'll have the mini mailbag every week on the Deep Dive Show every Thursday. Talk back at themmqb.com, Andy_Benoit, gramling_si. We are also both on Facebook. Remember to subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast. We have the four shows. They are all tremendous. We're really proud of them. We think you should subscribe. So get on there. Listen to them every week. TheMMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys Friday morning.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.